Tom, she said softly. I told you you couldn't die. And blindly, she hugged close whatever was nearest to her. Sounds came to Krydike as he drifted in weightlessness. It was like listening to Beethoven, or like trying actually to understand a humpback whale. Somebody had left the audio link on in case he made any more sounds. No one had considered that the circuit went both ways. Words penetrated the gravity tank from the outer room. They were tantalizing, like those ghosts of meaning in a great symphony, hinting that the composer had caught a glimpse of something notes could only vaguely convey, and words could never approach. Takata Jim spluttered and mumbled. The threatening tone was clear, so was the cautious clarity of Gillian Baskin's voice. If only he could understand the words, but Anglic was lost to him. Krydike knew his ship was in peril, and there was nothing he could do to help. The old gods weren't through with him and would not let him move. They had much more to show him before he was ready to serve their purposes. He had become resigned to periodic episodes of terror, like diving to do battle with a great octopus, then rising for a rest before going back down to the chaos once again. When they came to pull him down, he would once more be caught in the maelstrom of idea glyphs, of throbbing dreams, which hammered away at his engineer's mind with insistent impressions of otherness. The assault never would have been possible without the destruction of his speech centers. Krydike grieved over the loss of words. He listened to the talk sounds from the outer world, concentrating as hard as he could on the eerie, musical familiarity. It wasn't all gone, he decided after a while. He could recognize a few words here and there. Simple ones, mostly the names of objects, or people, or simple actions associated with them. That much his distant ancestors could do. But he couldn't remember the words more than three or four deep, though it was impossible to follow a conversation. He might laboriously decipher a sentence, only to forget it completely when he worked on the next one. It was agonizingly difficult, and at last he made himself cease the vain effort. That's not the way, he concluded. Instead, he should try for the gestalt, he told himself. Use the tricks the old gods had been using on him. Encompass. Absorb. Like trying to feel what Beethoven felt by submerging into the mystery of the violin concerto. Murmuring sounds of angry sophons squawked from the speaker. The noises bounced around the chamber and scattered like bitter droplets. After the terrible beauty of down, he felt repelled. He forced himself to listen. To seek a way, some humble way to help Streaker and his crew. Need swelled within him as he concentrated. He sought a center, a focus in the chaotic sounds. Rancor turbid in the riptide, ignoring sharks, internecine struggle, inviting sharks, foolish opportunism. Against his will, he felt himself begin to click aloud. He tried to stop, knowing where it would lead, but the clicks emerged involuntarily from his brow, soon joined by a series of low moans. The sounds of the argument in sickbay drifted away as his own soft singing wove a thicker and thicker web around him. The humming, crackling echoes caused the walls to fade as a new reality took shape all around. A dark presence slowly grew next to him. Without words, he told it to go away. No, we are back. You have more to learn. For all I know, you're a delirium of mine. None of you ever make a sound of your own. You always speak in reflections from my own sonar. Have your echoes ever been so complex? Who knows what my unconscious could do? In my memory are more strange sounds than any other living cetacean has heard. I've been where living clouds whistled to tame hurricanes. I've heard the doom booms of black holes and listened to the songs of stars. All the more reason you are the one we want, the one we need. I am needed here. Indeed. Come, Krydike. The old god, Kif-Kree, moved closer. Its sonically translucent form glistened. Its sharp teeth flashed. Figment or not, the great thing began to move, carrying him along, as before, helpless to resist. Down. Then, just as resignation washed over Krydike, he heard a sound. Miraculously, it wasn't one of his own making, diffracted against the insane dream. It came from somewhere else, powerful and urgent. Pay no heed. Come. Krydike's mind leaped after it as if it were a school of mullet, even as the noise swelled to deafening volume. You are sensitized. You have psi you had not known before. You know not yet its use. Relinquish quick rewards. Come the hard way. Krydike laughed and opened himself to the noise from the outside. It crashed in, dissolving the shining blackness of the old god into sonic specks that shimmered and then slowly disappeared. That way is not for you, Krydike. Then the great browed god was gone. Krydike laughed at his release from the cruel illusion, grateful for the new sound that had freed him. But the noise kept growing. Victory went to panic as it swelled and became a pressure within his head, pushing against the walls of his skull, hammering urgently to get out. The world became a whirling, groaning, alien cry for help. Krydike let out a warbling whistle of despair as he tried to ride the crashing tide. Chapter 50 Streaker. The waves of pseudo sound were fading at last.
Krydike!
McAdee cried and swam to the captain's tank. The others turned also, just noticing the injured dolphin's distress.
What's the matter with him?
Jillian swam up next to McAdee. She could see the captain struggle feebly, giving off a slowly diminishing series of low moans.
I don't know. No one was watching him as the psi bomb hit its peak. Just now I saw he was disturbed.
The large, dark gray form within the tank seemed calmer now. The muscles along Krydike's back twitched slowly as he let out a low, warbling cry. Ignacio Metz swam up alongside Jillian.
Jillian, he began, I want you to know that I'm very glad Tom is alive, although this tardiness bodes poorly. I'd still stake my life that this Trojan seahorse plan of his is ill-conceived.
We'll have to discuss that at ship's council then, won't we, Dr. Metz? She said coolly. Metz cleared his throat.
I'm not sure the acting captain will permit.
He subsided under her gaze and looked away. She glanced at the cottage inn. If he did anything rash, it could be the last straw that broke Streaker's morale. Jillian had to convince Takata Jim that he would lose if he contested with her, and he had to be offered a way out, or there might still be civil war aboard the ship. Takata Jim looked back at her with a mixture of pure hostility and calculation. She saw the sound-sensitive tip of his jaw swing toward each of the Fen in turn, gauging their reaction. The news that Thomas Orley still lived would go through the ship like a clarion. Already one of the armed Stenos guards, presumably carefully picked by the vice-captain, looked mutinously jubilant and chattered hopefully with Watasetti. I've got to act fast, Jillian realized. He's desperate. He swam toward Takata Jim, smiling. He backed away, a loyal Stenos glaring at her from his side. Jillian spoke softly, so the others could not hear.
"Don't even think it, Takata Jim. The Fen aboard this ship have Tom Orley fresh on their minds now. If you thought you could harm me before this, even you know better now."
Takata Jim's eyes widened, and Jillian knew she had struck on target, capitalizing on the legend of her psi ability.
"Besides, I'm going to stick close to Ignacio Met. He's gullible, but if he witnesses me being harmed, you'll lose him. You need a token man, don't you? Without at least one, even your Stenos will melt away."
Takata Jim clapped his jaw loudly.
"Don't try to bully me. I don't have to harm you. I am the legal authority on this ship. I can have you confined to quarters."
Jillian looked at her fingernails.
"Are you so sure?"
"You would incite the crew to disobey the legal ship's master?"
Takata Jim sounded genuinely shocked.
He must know that many, perhaps most of the Tersiops would follow her, whatever the law said. But that would be mutiny and tear the crew apart.
"I have the law on my side," he hissed. Jillian sighed. The hand must be played out for all the damage this would do if the dolphins of Earth found out. He whispered the two words she had not wanted to utter.
"Secret orders," he said. Takata Jim stared at her, then let out a keening cry.
He stood on his tail and did a backflip while his guard blinked in confusion. Jillian turned and saw Metz and Wattasetti staring at them.
"I don't believe you,"
Takata Jim spluttered, spraying water in all directions.
"On Earth, we were promised. Streaker is our ship."
Jillian shrugged.
"Ask your bridge crew if the battle controls work," she offered. "Have someone try to leave through the outlock. Try to open the door to the armory."
Takata Jim whirled and sped to a comm screen at the far end of the room. His guard stared at Jillian momentarily, then followed. His look conveyed a sense of betrayal. Not all the crew would feel that way, Jillian knew. Most would probably be delighted, but deep inside an implication would settle. One of the main purposes of Streaker's mission, to build in the Neo-Fen a sense of independence and self-confidence, had been compromised.
"Did I have any other choice? Is there anything else I might have tried first?"
She shook her head, wishing Tom were here.
Tom might have settled everything with one sarcastic little ditty in trinary that put everybody to shame.
"Oh, Tom," she thought, "I should have gone instead of you."
This ends Psi 2 of Cassette 7.